Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Simpuga in Washington.
There has not been a holistic definition of what is actually happening in the Northwest and how to arrest the situation.
Gunmen abduct worshippers in northern Nigeria.
We've got, you know, a lot of cases in our courts. As of now, we have got 7 cases that have been concluded.
Malawi officials arrest a group of people for human trafficking to Oman.
This is due to several factors, including the persistent high costs of processing and transportation, logistics, and the exchange rate of also currencies of countries as against the U.S. dollar.
And the Food and Agriculture Organization says world food commodity prices dipped for the 5th consecutive month in August, but consumers are not yet feeling the benefits of declining food prices. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Police in northwest Nigeria say worshippers were kidnapped while they were observing prayers, despite intensified action against armed gangs ordered by Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja.
Zamfara State Police spokesperson Mohammed Shehu says the attack took place Friday afternoon at the Jumat Central Mosque in the Gumi local government area as worshippers gathered for prayers. Eyewitnesses told local media the attackers, disguised as worshippers, hid guns in their clothes until they infiltrated the mosque. The attackers shot sporadically into the air and herded dozens of worshippers into a nearby forest. Zamfara State Police responded to the incident, but Shehu said he could not immediately offer VOA any additional details about the attack. Armed gangs have terrorized northwest and central Nigeria for years. Most recently, violence spread to the southeast, where separatist group Indigenous People of Biafra, IPOB, has been largely blamed for causing unrest. IPOB denies the allegations. Security analyst Senator Irebu says the government's approach to addressing insecurities has not worked.
So this is continued red flag. I feel most of the responses have been too reactionary and ad hoc in nature. There has not been holistic definition of what is actually happening in the Northwest and how to arrest the situation. And this also hampers the effectiveness of security operation or security agencies, because for them to operate effectively, their scope of operation need to be well defined.
Last month, during a top security meeting, President Muhammadu Buhari ordered security chiefs to deal with terrorists without constraints. Days later, the Nigerian Air Force said airstrikes in the northwest and central regions killed 55 gang members and freed some hostages. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Mali's Foreign Affairs Ministry is denying accusations made by the United Nations of human rights violations. Annie Rosenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
An 11-page statement posted on the official social media accounts of Mali's foreign ministry denies all allegations leveled in a UN note that implicated Malian state security forces. The UN mission to Mali, MINUSMA, released a quarterly note on human rights Wednesday, accounting for the period between April 1st and June 30th of this year. The note said that most of the human rights violations in Mali during that period were committed by Islamist militant groups, but also says that it documented serious violations of human rights and international humanitarian law by state security forces. The note adds that there was a decrease in all recorded human rights violations compared to the first quarter of 2022. Mali's foreign ministry statement called the allegations against state security forces biased and said they were made without tangible proof and under the threat of terrorist groups, with an objective to tarnish the image of state security forces. Tensions between Mali's military government and MINUSMA have been rising in recent months. In July, Mali arrested 49 soldiers from Ivory Coast who had arrived as support for a UN contingent on their arrival at Bamako's airport, accusing them of being mercenaries. Also in July, MINUSMA's spokesperson was expelled from the country after he made comments on Twitter claiming the UN had notified the Malian government of the soldiers' arrival. The Malian government denied the UN access to Moura, Mali in April, where it wanted to carry out a human rights investigation into an alleged massacre committed by Malian forces working with Russian mercenaries. MINUSMA's quarterly note also claimed to have documented the killing of 50 civilians in Homburi, Mali, by state security forces working with foreign military personnel. The Malian government statement did not address accusations that it is working with foreign military forces. Mali says it only works with official Russian trainers and has received military aircraft and weapons shipments from Russia. A number of countries have accused Mali of working with mercenaries from the Wagner Group. After nearly 10 years there, France withdrew from Mali in August because of concerns about Mali working with the Kremlin-linked paramilitary organization. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Two non-government organizations have taken to the East African Court of Justice in Arusha, Tanzania, six of the seven member states of the East African Community, on accusations of failing to protect their citizens from human trafficking and slave trade. Local media report that OZIN Africa Uganda and the Uganda Christian Lawyers Fraternity are seeking an order that will declare labor externalization unacceptable as it amounts to what they say is modern-day slave trade contrary to accepted international standards. They accuse the governments of Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, and South Sudan of exposing their citizens to servitude and torture by allowing the externalization of labor. DR Congo is not part of the suit since it was admitted to the community recently. To find out more about the issue of labor export from East Africa, I reached Charles Mwanguhia, a political analyst and host of the political show Frontline on Uganda's NBS TV. Charles, how serious is this issue?
Labor export to the Gulf is not just a big problem, but it's also big business across the countries of East Africa, particularly Kenya and Uganda. It is estimated that as many as potentially 300,000 Ugandans are possibly providing labor in the Middle East. Now, this is coming with a lot of challenges because there have been reports of gross human rights abuses of the people, the young people, mainly girls that have been sent to do domestic workers, domestic servants in the Middle East. A lot of ugly videos of these domestic workers being tortured by their employers in the Middle East have been circulating. It's caused debate, especially in the Ugandan parliament, in the Kenyan parliament, and there's been a lot of concern. But also, government in this region see the export of labor from two perspectives. One is it helps to address a very serious challenge of unemployment, especially among young people. The labor we're exporting to the Middle East is unskilled. So it kind of relieves a lot of pressure, but also brings in some significant forex that the governments are looking at. So the challenges have been, this is the first time that we're having a court challenge going to the East African Court, but complaints have been around for some time.
There have been several reports detailing the mistreatment of these East Africans, especially women, young women in the Gulf states. Why haven't the governments taken an action to curb or stop this export?
The governments tell us that they have taken steps. They have engaged with their counterpart governments in the Middle East, in the Gulf, to try and give these people who are exported to provide labor decent working conditions, decent pay, and that they are treated humanely. Now, they complain that some of those who are ending up in the Middle East are not traveling formally. They're traveling informally, so they become difficult to track until they have problems wherever they are. And governments have been trying to say that if you want, we are licensing labor export companies, go through a registered, a genuine labor export company, then you stand a chance to be protected. If you travel on your own, then there is no way we can track and protect you.
Talking of these labor export companies, there are allegations that some of them are owned by people close to government officials, especially in Uganda, and that they can't be held to account. How true is that?
It's difficult to verify, because until you get to the registry and find out who owns what company, you can't rely on rumor to verify or to claim that a particular company is owned by person ABC. But there have been companies that have been punished, that government has raided, prosecuted its founders or owners, and there are those that haven't been touched. So it's difficult to say with certainty who owns what company until you verify. But yes, the rumors have been around. The complaints have been around, because they see how it's lucrative business, like I said. And people think that if, as it is lucrative business, and the complaints that have emerged, then government should be taking a stand against those who are not protecting the people they export.
Both these girls, or these employees who go to the Gulf, and the government, both of them benefit from this export. Do you think the court can remedy that?
I think court needs to. It can, in a way, if it gives guidance to governments to create stronger laws, to be strong on enforcement, to ensure that these people exported to provide labor, especially domestic labor, are treated more humanely. That the governments of the East African countries, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, can engage with their counterpart governments in the Gulf region to make sure that the extreme cases of abuse are addressed, and that perpetrators, both the companies that export and those that provide the employment, are brought to book. There is a particular case of a young lady who apparently whose organs were harvested. She went normal and then returned in a vegetative state. The complaint is that they removed her kidneys in a racket that harvests human organs. And that is the bigger concern about labor export to the Middle East, that people are using the excuse of exporting labor to take healthy Ugandan and harvest their vital organs. That particular girl has been compensated. The court ordered a compensation for her of about 30 million Uganda shillings, that's about 8,000 United States dollars. And the family is uncomfortable because she's completely dysfunctional. She can't do anything for herself. And the money would even be inadequate to provide her adequate medical care for her life, because her life is completely lost.
Charles Mwangwija is a political analyst and host of the political show Frontline on Uganda's NBS TV. I reached him by phone in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Malawian officials say they have arrested two police officers, a medical worker, and a Burundian refugee for human trafficking to Oman. Malawi officials said Friday they have been seeking to investigate alleged abuses of Malawians trafficked to the Middle Eastern nation, but Oman officials have refused them visas. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
The arrests are part of the crackdown of people operating unregistered job recruitment agencies who are trafficking Malawians to countries like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Oman under the pretext of finding them jobs. Minister of Homeland Security in Malawi, Gene Sendeza, told a news conference Friday that two police officers were arrested Thursday for granting trafficked persons clearance to travel to Oman through Kamuzu International Airport. She said a medical officer working at a public hospital was also arrested for providing a health certificate for the trafficked persons, clearing them of any disease, while a refugee from Burundi was conniving with other people in human trafficking. Police say the suspects will appear in court soon on charges of human trafficking.
We've got, you know, a lot of cases in our courts. As of now, we have got 7 cases that have been concluded, and 71 of them are still active.
Many Malawians have recently been trafficked to countries such as Oman, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates for so-called employment opportunities. However, many of them complain that their employers are sexually, physically, and emotionally abusing them. For example, in a Facebook post that went viral last week, a Malawian woman working in Oman alleged that she suffered human rights abuses such as rape, torture, and poor pay. She compared her situation in Oman to that of slavery. Vera Kantukule is Malawi's labor minister. She says her office has received 40 complaints about abuse from Malawians trapped in Oman. But Kantukule says Malawi government's efforts to investigate the allegations in Oman are facing challenges.
We are unable to assist them because we are being denied entry into Oman. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we don't have any bilateral agreements or international agreements with that country. So we are using our embassy in Kuwait, and they've also been facing a few challenges to break through to investigate about these issues.
There has been no comment from authorities in Oman on the matter. Kantukule said the Malawi government has intensified its crackdown on people who are operating illegal job recruitment agencies. She gave an example of her personal effort to stop such activities. Accompanied by an ununiformed police officer, she went undercover, posing as a prospective employee at a suspected illegal job recruitment office in the capital, Lilongwe. The undercover operation resulted in a number of arrests. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The Food and Agriculture Organization says consumers are not yet feeling the benefits of declining food prices. The FAO says world food commodity prices dipped for the fifth consecutive month in August. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Lower world food prices generally reflect better availability at the global level. However, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization says this time, lower wholesale prices have not led to better food access or lower prices for consumers. FAO Director of the Markets and Trade Division, Boubacar Ben Belhassen, says availability has improved while access to food commodities has not. This despite declining prices 5 months in a row.
This is due to several factors, including the persistent high costs of processing and transportation, logistics, and the exchange rate of currencies of countries as against the U.S. dollar. Also, the cost of living crisis has affected access. So that's why we are not seeing this decline in prices at the world level translating into lower prices for consumers or at the retail level.
Ben Belhassen cautions that a drop in world prices does not necessarily result in market stability. He says that is subject to the uncertainties and volatility surrounding developments in the energy market and the price of fertilizer. He says continued high energy and gas prices reduce profitability and increase production costs for farmers. He adds that will pose a serious challenge for farmers in the coming year. He notes the UN-brokered Black Sea Grain Initiative, allowing Ukraine to export its grain and other foodstuffs, has improved the availability of food on the world market. Prior to the July agreement, Russia had blockaded Ukraine's three key ports, triggering a global food crisis. Ben Belhassen says the better availability of food on the global level has not translated into greater access at the consumer level. He says the increased shipment of goods from Ukraine has not alleviated food scarcity in sub-Saharan Africa and other developing countries. He notes that is because most grain exports go to middle-income countries.
So it did not really go to those countries that were or are most affected or where they are mostly in need for better domestic supply. So that's also probably, we hope the situation will improve with time. We hope that the shipment also will go to this country, so that we are still concerned about access, about the cost of living crisis.
The FAO official says families in low and middle income countries tend to spend 50% to 60% of their monthly income on food. He warns the implication for food security could be very serious if consumer food prices do not drop significantly. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A new documentary, Birth of a Planet, tells the story of the legendary black newspaper, the Richmond Planet, and the group of 13 formerly enslaved men in Richmond, Virginia, who under the leadership of its editor, John Mitchell Jr., operated a paper that gained reputation as an advocate of racial equality. The journalists used the printing press to fight the shocking realities of the Jim Crow South, even as they were in constant danger. Red Carpet's Jackson Mvunganyi spoke to Ron Carey, the CEO of Tilt, the company behind the production of the documentary.
Yeah, briefly, Richmond is a culturally diverse area, one of the earliest areas in the states where slavery took place, and in fact, at one point was the second or third largest market in the 1800s for slavery. It's grown since and has become a cosmopolitan city of about 1.2 million.
And Richmond was also the home to the Richmond Planet, and its editor, John Mitchell, I think it was referred to as the fighting editor.
Yeah, now the Richmond Planet, first African-American-owned publication in the state of Virginia, with the fighting editor, John Mitchell Jr. And John Mitchell Jr. realized the power of the word. Realized the power that the press could bring, and wanted to tell the stories of African-American or Black people of that time. And John Mitchell was just a profound leader who understood business, and I like to say he left us a blueprint for not only what society could have been doing 100 plus years ago, but what we should still be doing today.
What would you say was the beat or the focus of the Richmond Planet? And what kind of challenges were the reporters and editors of this paper faced with at that point in history?
Well, clearly, we know at least three of the folks involved with the founding of the paper were demoted at their jobs because three of them were educators and involved at a very senior level in education in Richmond public schools and much of the society that was opposed to kind of the self-improvement aspect that was taking place with the Black community looked at some of these individuals and said, these are the folks we want to punish. So, It played a role in terms of sharing what was going on to society. It was a dual publication to the traditionally white publication in the city of Richmond. It told the true story of what was going on from a lynching perspective and conviction or what might be taking place across the state. So it was really the paper of record for the African-American community where one might go if they wanted to get the truth.
And what kind of stories were they telling at the time?
Oh, wow. They covered everything. Just, you know, it was a mirror publication to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And so they covered social events taking place. They covered births, as John Mitchell, the descendant of John Mitchell Jr., would say today. He's the great-great-nephew, which is he would say, wow. And if John Mitchell Jr. and his colleagues were investing in a business, he didn't just talk about it. He bragged about it in the publication. So it was a brag piece. But he was brilliant. They were brilliant in that it wasn't only well written, but it was well illustrated. So even if you weren't literate, you would have an ability to look at the bold font and pictures and understand what was taking place.
Mm. And what was the power of the print media in Richmond at the time? And what would you say is the impact? So what impact did the paper have on the community and the local politics?
Profound impact, because at one point, well before civil rights, Maggie Walker, who was here, John Mitchell Jr., who were here, leveraged the paper as a tool, a vehicle for spreading the word to the African-American population to say things like, wait a minute, we should have fair, equal rights to ride the rail cars across Richmond, and we've been designated pushed to the back. And so at one point they left. They literally walked off and called for the Black community across Richmond to boycott, and ultimately bankrupting that business. And so the paper was a powerful tool for sharing information and strengthening, raising numbers in terms of supporting causes, because it wasn't just about John Mitchell Jr. John Mitchell Jr. wanted to make it about us and the community.
Mm. And talk to us about the documentary. Why is this story important? Why do you think it needed to be told?
Yeah, I'll start from the end. I think the story needed to be told because there are lots of people like Ron Carey that don't exist and don't have the freedoms to own businesses and real estate and property. If John Mitchell Jr. and Maggie Walker and others don't take this, the profound steps that they took to say, we're going to do things to improve the community for all Black people, not just a few individuals. So I think that that is the profound importance of this story. I think, you know, why we came across it is we wanted to, it resonated with me as an entrepreneur, a business owner, as a family man. And I just think it was so important that this story essentially sat there for a very long time. And because I owned a media company and because I had access to the storytelling capabilities, we could lift this story up. We didn't need to reinvent the story. All we needed to do was lift up, polish, and then say, let's share this with the world. And we wanted to do that in a way that wasn't editorializing. We wanted to cause people to pause and think and understand that, wow, some of the conversations we're having today were still taking place. You know, they were taking place 130 years ago.
I was Ron Curry, the CEO of Tilt, the company behind the production of the documentaries, speaking with my colleague Jackson Mvunganyi. This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Samson Omale. And that will be followed by music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports. And for that, let's go to Abuja and join Samson Omale. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. United States women's national team beat Nigeria 4-0 on Saturday in a friendly in Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas. The United States women's national team was playing their first match after qualifying for both the 2023 FIFA World Cup and 2024 Olympics in July. The team will face the 46th-ranked Super Falcons team again on Tuesday in Washington in the second of their two exhibition matches this month. Another African side, Africa's Banyana began their preparations for next year's Women's World Cup with a 3-0 loss to Brazil in an international friendly played in South Africa on Friday evening. And now to the CAF Super Cup, where Rabat, Morocco will host the 2022 edition of the CAF Super Cup on Saturday, 10th September. The match will be played at the Prince Mouly Abdellah Stadium. The CAF Super Cup Final 2022 will be played by two Moroccan clubs, Wydad Athletic Club, winners of the Confederation of African Football Champions League, and RS Berkane, CAF Confederations Cup champions. This is Wydad's fourth final. They go level with Raja Casablanca for the most Super Cup final appearances for a Moroccan team. Staying with CAF-organized competitions, Ugandan Cranes confirmed their place at next year's African Nations Championship in fascinating style after dumping Taifa Stars of Tanzania. The Cranes defeated Tanzania 3-0 in the return leg played on Saturday at the St. Mary's Stadium, Kitinde, to advance 4-0 on aggregate. In Nigeria, the Super Eagles Team B were knocked out of the 2022 African Nations Championship qualifying race after losing 4-5 to Ghana via penalty shootout on Saturday. Now to results for the Regional Council of South African Football Association COSAFA Women's Championship. Host South Africa cruised to a 4-0 victory over Mauritius to take charge of Group A at the 2022 COSAFA Women's Championship on Saturday. The victory means Banyana have a full haul of 6 points from their two games and remain on course for the semifinals. Angola was held to a 1-1 draw by Mozambique in the earlier game in Group A. That means they can now only finish as the best place runner-up. Angola was held to a 1-1 draw by Mozambique in the earlier game in Group A. That means they can now only finish as the best place runner-up as they seek a semi-final place. Zambia will be back in action later on Sunday when Group B resumes as they take on the other victor from the opening round of matches. The earlier match will see Namibia and Eswatini both seek to keep their chances alive with a win. In tennis news, world number 5, Tunisia's Ons Jabeur, is through to the fourth round of the US Open for the first time after coming from a set down to beat American Shelby Rogers, world's number 31, 2-1, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3. Jabeur will now take on Russian Veronika Kudermetova, world number 18 in the US Open round of 16. That's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with the music from the continent. Mm-hmm.
so your mommy go down, to the down, down, down. I just hit it like hell.
Shazi, Ebemam Love, Mon Quasi, Trinin Dawa, Womwasi, Wonchen, Nanyan, Bimpidimpa, Medi, Ebino, Mutumu, Gatu, Medi Mamuno, Mutumu, Faka, Ekekwa, Siwa, Epa, Momo Visa, Yinkidi Easter, Eden, your sister, the curb in the trickster, while I demasize, being capping, incense, and attraction.
Signed by my waist, now live over. Sweet kind of love, sweet up in a colada. I've been putting you from the corner. Waiting for your name, you say Susanna. Old school I do, old school I fella. Call me a funky with all this rabbi.
Yeah, feeling like a president. Every time you come my way. Pretty and intelligent. Me not care what them say. Queen of me resident. Baby, oh, you're born that J. And me no give a damn. I day with my London, babe. And me say, oh, Susanna. Oh,
Susanna, yeah. Oh, Susanna, I wanna spend all my rubber. Oh, Susanna, yeah. Oh, Susanna, oh, my lover.
I'ma buy you a drink, I be thinking I'm deep in. Fell in love with a stripper on a weekday. Rose a F, baby, so I call him Weezy. Need a million accounts, then I'm busy. Shorty on E, so I call her feeling gassed up. She's too gassed, and they really in a meeting. It's confidence, baby, girl, I ain't arrogant. I don't even know why you got an attitude.
Susanna go make a boss con. Susanna go make a day con. Susanna go make a day cut. Susanna go make us your drug. Oh, Susanna. Mashallah, we go blow, inshallah. Want us real stuff for love.
Oh, Susanna. Oh, Susanna, yeah. Oh, Susanna. I wanna spend all my rubber. Oh, Susanna. Oh, Susanna, yeah. Oh, Susanna. I'm my lover.
1, 2 step to this groove. In this together, me and you. Band them actors, them are intruders. Them boy, they begging truth. Everything coming in two. All of my blessings times two. Everything's coming in. All of my blessings times two.
After round one, she can't wait for round two. Baby, come round, show me what I can do. Cause he fresh home, so bring a friend too. He don't trust, so sorry, but that's can too. BBS looking like I won the lotto. Energy wagging under my photos. Baby, when I come, yours no photo. No excuse, bro, made it out of zone.
Making money this year and next year. Still praying, bro, can't fresh on this year. She only loves me cause I bought her a necklace. The love for the money makes you reckless. So that every show, there's no end to the queue. Remember when I used to go halves in the queue. In the hood, I seen a lot, now my eyes full. So she wanna have plans with the eyes.
Feeling like a president. Every time you come my way. Pretty and intelligent. Me not care what them say. Queen of me resident. Baby, you're born that J. And me not give a damn. All day with my London day. So me say, oh, Susanna. I wanna spend all my rubber. Oh, Susanna. Oh, Susanna, yeah. Oh, Susanna. I'm my lover.
Yes, it's Twitch on the track, yeah. I say one. Baby, yo, do you remember the other day I spent with you? Yeah, it should be between just me and you. See what we do for this over. I want us to do it all over, yeah. Yeah, make I be your Superman. Make I be your Superman. I go fight for your love, oh, baby, yo. I go fight for your love, oh, baby, yo. Make I be your Superman. Make I be your Superman.
This your love defeats me more than sugar cane. Anytime we do this, I know they feel the same again.
Without you,
About you, them no see light around you. If Wendy Williams know you, then you day inside the shade room. You know be them with them on you. Forget to diamond. Nobody, when they don't talk about you, nobody. Even nobody, when they don't talk about you, nobody. Nobody, you be nobody. When they don't talk about you. Say hello.
up. When the woman start make up, them say he be man we do up. Them say he be man we do up. You know be every woman we drop a man. Before she go make him learn some sense. You and your fake ass cause friends. You and your lazy ass cause friends. You know be every woman we drop a man. Before she go make him learn some sense. You and your fake ass cause friends. You and your lazy ass cause friends. Nobody, but they don't talk about you. Nobody. You be nobody when they don't talk about you. Nobody, nobody. You be nobody when they don't talk about you. Nobody, you're nobody. You be nobody when they don't talk about you. Ooh, ooh.
She say, who say, he say, she say, who say.
About you, it means that they don't know you. If them no gossip about you, them no see light around you. If Wendy Williams know you, then you day inside the shadow. You know be them way them on you. Forget to diamond do you. Be nobody, but they don't talk about you. Nobody. Be nobody when they don't talk about you.
People they think say be what them they see, be what I they see. But I know send girl everything about you just to be me. All the imperfections they never catch my attention. They say nobody is perfect, baby, but you are so perfect, baby. You see, I know you want me for me. Someday we'll start a family, baby. Do you feel me? I love the way you love me, and girl, I love you too. The things when you did do, the way you hold me, boo. I really like the way you kiss me too. You see, I know you want me for me. Someday we'll start a family. Baby, do you feel me now?
charge you. Anything when you want, I go buy you. You know me, I know fee borrow. I'm looking for more than a vibe. I'm looking for more than just one ice. Me, I need a wife. Promise you gon' be mine.
That was our Sunday music spot. Sincerely hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. And from the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.